All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nosdorf with me, as always, Pastor Jim Bowser.
How are you doing, Patrick?
And Lucas McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
I don't know. No warm-up. I don't feel loose. I'm not stretched out.
We did our own warm-up. That was not.
I don't know if I'm ready for this.
Not recordable.
That was not recordable.
That's true.
All the dumb jokes came out.
All of them.
Yeah. Good news, everybody.
Oh.
Right into the news story, too.
Well, yeah, what it was
coming.
It feels blunt.
Coming
it feels
fast.
Blunt.
All right, let's go. Let's go for it. I'm ready.
It's Fat Bear Week.
Yes.
Fat Bear Week.
As of time of release, it's the end of the Fat Bear Week. It goes to the 30th of September.
Yeah,
but
it will
be still, over. You're still in Fat Bear Week.
Right now, we're very much in the throes.
Yes. Right in the middle.
Live every week like it's Fat Bear Week is my philosophy.
Yeah. I need a shirt.
Yeah. Fat Bear Week winner.
A little behind the listening or behind the pod, we were talking about how to decorate this new space. I think that's a good slogan to put on our wall. We can get a mural, live every week like it's Fat Bear Week. I think that could be good for us.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, if you're a cross stitcher,
yeah,
cross stitch has a fat bear side.
Yes, we would put a cross. Yeah,
I would love that.
To go with our cross stitch. Yeah.
Or a fat bear.
Cross stitch fat bear. I like that.
Yeah.
Also acceptable cross-stitch Jesus. We would take Jesus. Why not?
Right. But not like a normal Jesus.
No, it's got to be cross-stitched.
Yeah. Yes. But like it needs to have some quirkiness to it. We already have a very unusual Jesus.
We do.
Picture.
We don't need to expand that.
We're not going to get into it right now.
It's just there.
Okay, at the Katmai National Park in Alaska,
which Patrick did not take us to when we were on a mission trip. In Alaska.
We went to Denali.
We did go to Denali. Yes. Katmai was going to be like a 4-hour private plane ride or something.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, one lady I talked to in Alaska, she's like, "You should go here," and it was a private plane trip to get there. That was like $500 a person. I was like, "Okay, that sounds awesome."
I don't think you understand what our budget is.
She's like, "If you really want to see bears," I'm like, "I do," but yeah.
Alaska's just built different. They're like, "Oh yeah, that's totally normal. We take the plane to the grocery store."
Yeah.
It looked awesome.
But those Alaskans also have a plane.
Right, yeah. There are so many, this is a side note, so many undocumented pilots in Alaska.
Undocumented pilots?
Because,
this sounds so nefarious.
Yeah, it's not legal. It is not legal. But because they learn how to fly before they can drive for the most part. So they just are like taking dad's plane out to...
So what you're saying is people who do not have a plane driver's license, not illegal immigrants who are just flying around Alaska.
Undocumented flyers, yes.
Could be both. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, get ice on that one. Yeah.
I'm just going to say there are lots of people in like the United States who learn to drive very early on, but still get a driver's license when they turn 16.
Right.
So why don't these people get a pilot's license?
The problem is that your hours don't count. Your hours of experience.
And so they're feeling like this is a waste of my time because I've already done all this.
Right, I'm a 2,000-hour pilot.
But none of them count.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, because they're all under the table, as it were.
Mm. Sure. So. There you go.
It's hard to fly from underneath the table.
Okay. I'm sorry. All right.
I've been gone for a while.
Katmai National Park hosts the Fat Bear Week.
Fat bears.
Yes.
So they take photos of the fattest bears in the park who are fattening up for hibernation.
I love it. They're beautiful.
Yes.
Every single one
bears.
Of them.
Yes. And so they now have the bracket up.
Love this.
Probably at time of release, if you get on there, it's probably down to the final four of Fat Bears.
All right.
Yeah.
But you can still make your voice heard. I will put a link to their website.
Love
that. You can
go
vote. So what do you think? Are you excited to vote for Fat Bears?
Always.
So I'm the bottom right of the bracket. I don't remember what number designator it is because they don't have names yet. They just have numbers.
They don't have names.
That is the real crime in the Fat Bear
that we haven't named
them. They don't have names. Two of them out of the eight have names. One is named Chunk and one is named Grazer.
Chunk has been in the contest before.
Correct.
Yeah.
The other six are just like bear number 216.
Oh,
right.
No.
Bear
so
number
very difficult
909.
To, like, talk about. Yeah.
And like, if it's Chunk versus 26,
I'm voting Chunk.
Yeah. Like, Chunk is just... Chunk has more personality, more excitement around it. All these fat bears need some fat bear names, is all I'm just saying.
What would be a fat bear number? Like, what's a good number that represents a fat bear?
Well, a bigger number, but 26 versus 909. 909 seems like a fatter
number.
That
is a fat bear number.
For some reason, 888 feels like a very fat number. Yeah,
yeah.
Sure. Triple eights.
Yeah. Super fat number.
It feels very fat.
Fat with a PH as well.
What would be a good fat bear name, though? If we're giving them Katmai National Park names,
Chunk is taken.
Yeah. Chunk. with an O.
Chunk and chalk.
Right. Oh, Lord, he coming.
And chank.
Right. Oh, man. Let's see. I don't know.
I think a big boy, but boy is spelled B-O-I.
Yes, you know? Big
okay,
boy.
Big boy.
Yeah. Is, Bubba.
Yeah, a Bubba is definitely yes. a good fat
bear. Because there's some lady fat bears.
There
so
are.
Do we have a big boy and Bubba both feel very gender specific.
I think a big Bertha would be
big
a
Bertha. Bear. Yeah. Yes.
And I also think you could, you know, flip it. I think a bear named Tiny could also be a good fat bear.
Sure.
Yes.
So, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And the ironic yeah. Tiny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These... Kitami National Park. These are the names people want to vote for in the Fat Bear Week.
Certainly the names.
Because I want to know, are these competitors coming back around? I won't remember if bear number 909 wins, sure. I will forget immediately.
But we remember
but
Chunk from
if
another
Big
year.
Bertha wins and she's back in the contest next year.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, I'm back in a winner. Let's get Big Bertha to the top.
Yeah.
You know, I'm all for it. So yes, this is the Fat. We really should have gotten on this earlier because now they have a fat bear bracket.
They didn't tell us about it earlier. We got
on
it as soon as they told us.
The bottom right of that bracket.
The bottom right.
Yeah.
Bear 909.
Yeah, that's my 99 is
bear
my,
99.
Yep.
Okay.
It's my pick for fat bear.
It's pretty fat.
He's
you
fat.
Know? Yeah.
99 problems isn't a bad fat bear name.
99 problems and a bear ain't one.
Yes. Yeah. That these are some good options here. 128 Junior also is.
Yep. What?
You had a 128,
yeah.
and now
yeah.
you named it 128 Junior. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. So let us know your pick for a fat bear.
Absolutely.
Name.
We want to hear
that's
him.
Really. You
I
know.
Think maybe a Garfield.
Okay. I could vote for a Garfield.
Yeah.
You know, likes lasagna, hates sure. Mondays.
Yeah.
My kind of bear.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other fat bear names you want to throw out there at the last second here?
Nah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Anything you like bacon, you know, just like, you know, after foods is probably pretty good.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know what bears eat, like salmon. But like that's not a good fat.
Berries.
Food.
Berries.
It's also not a good fat food.
Yeah.
They're really healthy.
I know.
How do they do this?
How do bears get fat on salmon and berries?
Right. I thought those were the not fat foods.
Yeah. Because look, bears, if you want some tips on how to fatten up,
right.
I got them for
right.
you.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. You need to be adding potato chips.
Yeah. That's right. Get all the saturated fats
right.
and
sure.
corn syrup that you can find.
Yeah. More gluten.
That's right.
You could be in some pancakes.
All the gluten.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, you need to figure out how to get fatter.
I think we can teach the bears a thing or two. We could really train Chunk up to make him a surefire winner.
Yeah. You could probably still eat the salmon, but you got to wrap it in bacon.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Or get a lot of butter on that salmon.
Oh, man.
Butter
I could go for some bacon wrapped
are
buttered
we
salmon.
Are hungry? Is that what's happening right
I'm
now?
I am
hungry.
Now.
Yeah.
This is a tough time slot to record. The post-lunch time slot. It's,
it is.
You know,
yeah. It's weird. Yeah.
I think it's better than the pre-lunch time slot, though, because I was starving every time we recorded this pre-lunch.
So you're assuming that lunch happened, so now I'm just pre-later lunch.
You just not eat lunch?
Well, not yet.
Okay, that's a bummer.
Well, that's on you.
Yeah.
No denying that.
You could have eaten some salmon and berries and fattened up for winter.
I know.
I could go for
fat
some salmon and berries.
Fat pastor week.
Yes. Actually, no. That affects my health costs, so we don't want fat pastor week.
That's
Unfortunately, there's quite a few out
right.
there.
You would not win.
I would lose, and there's ample competition, and my health insurance reflects that reality.
So, Pastor David, you and I discussed talking about this beforehand, but I did not let you know, Elise.
Surprise. We're going to do a review of your performance on the podcast right now.
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
We got some
I don't even work here.
So I did want to briefly mention the Charlie Kirk Memorial. We talked about this, and I thought some interesting things. I've seen some clips from it. I did not watch it. Did you watch the Charlie Kirk Memorial? And it's okay to say no.
Are you asking me or David?
I think it took place on a Sunday morning during the time when I was like leading worship. So no, but also if it had not, still
also, I was at church for that, so no.
Yeah, there you go.
So. Good similar excuse. We really we coordinated that.
Some interesting things took place. So. I didn't, again, none of us watched it, but I've read things about it.
Okay.
And at time of recording, we record on Wednesdays, Jimmy Kimmel came back on the air last night and he referenced it and honestly said some nice things about Charlie Kirk's widow, Erica, and her speech at the memorial. And I think that it's worth talking about.
Interesting, because spouses don't often speak at memorial service. That's interesting that she did.
Yeah.
You know, this was obviously
complaining. It's just
usually the president doesn't speak at your memorial service, and he did there as well. So,
I assume a president will speak at my memorial service. So,
which president are you hoping for?
Could be a president of a council. Could be you know, a president of something.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, a president. Yes. All right. I'm hoping the president of the Hair Club for Men speaks.
Wait, at mine? Rude?
Yeah. No. At mine. And not because of anything. But I don't know if you remember the Chris commercial. Yeah. I'm not just the president. I'm also the member.
Yes. No, I'm not just a member. I'm the president. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There you go. So that's... I'm trying to think of other presidents out there.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so.
The presidents of the United States. The band.
The band. Yes. They could sing that Peaches song at my funeral.
I'm
down
with that. I could go for having millions of peaches in heaven. That'd be great.
Sure, there you go.
I don't get any of these references.
It's a band called The Presence United States.
And America. A song called Peaches.
Yes. Is it funeral appropriate?
No. I mean, I don't know that it's funeral
Anything
inappropriate.
Anything could be funeral appropriate. Right,
yes. Anything is appropriate for a funeral if you try hard enough.
It's not like explicit. It's just about peaches. And
it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of weird.
Being so, in a can and coming from a store.
It's late 90s.
Yeah.
Alt rock. So,
great,
yeah. Oh, well, anyway, in her speech, she talked about forgiveness and forgiving the gunman who killed her husband. And I think that, and pointing to Christ in the midst of this. And since we are kind of a culture and Christianity podcast, I think it's worth mentioning, like, this was a cultural moment that is heavily influenced by Christianity. And in Jimmy Kimmel's speech on his first night back after suspension, he referenced it and said, like, it was whatever we take away from this, this is something that is hopeful we can all kind of point to and look at. And I know, like, the cynical part of me or you as a listener might be like, is it just performative? Is it just mere words? And I can't say for sure. But whether it is or not, the sentiment of forgiving one's enemies and offering that to somebody who does something horrific is very much in line with who Jesus is.
Yep.
And I think a very beautiful moment. It was a weird memorial to watch. That crowd cheers for this, and crowd also cheers for Stephen Miller's talk about how everybody against them is a nobody and they cannot stand. And President Trump's saying, I will not. I don't care about my enemies and I want them to, you know, lose. Again, crowd cheering for all these things is weird, but I do want to commend her for those words, and I think that those are powerful.
Forgiveness is good.
Yeah.
So
I can be pro forgiveness.
Yep.
All right, let's get into our main topic from Christianity Today. Yeah, Christianity, you know, we might need to say relevant, we were friends.
Oof.
But we're breaking up.
Yeah. Oh, you're no longer our best friend. Oh, yeah, I'm not saying you're no longer our friend. You're just no longer our best friend.
Very middle school.
Christianity Today might be our new best friend.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Have we exchanged friendship bracelets yet?
I think we have two different halves of a necklace.
Okay. Ooh, I like that one.
We have Best Fry, and they have Stend.
Best Fry was always the, like, the better half.
Be Fry. Yeah, Be Fry. That's right. Be Fry.
Yeah, and Stend.
Stend, yes. yeah, I don't know. Do we... I moved them to the top of my MySpace 8. I can guarantee that.
Oh, okay.
Whoa.
Elise doesn't understand that reference.
I do. I had a MySpace. I did all that amateur coding as well.
Look at you go.
So your MySpace, and you have, like, when you open it up, like, a song and a video playing at the exact same time.
Yep.
And, like, neon green lettering on a blue background.
I'm pretty sure I had a Good Charlotte song that played on.
Oh, nice. Good Charlotte.
I think I had a Killers song.
Very 90s.
On my. Yeah. So there you go. What about you? Did you have a song?
I actually did not have a MySpace page. I knew about MySpace and I had people, but I just
weren't
not
allowed.
Have I just didn't have it. Yeah, no. Facebook was my introduction into social media. Yeah.
Womp womp.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, because MySpace was such a great. Yeah.
It was. Great.
It was. I think it was better. Yeah.
It was great.
Customizable. Everybody could make their page how they wanted it to look, which was nice and.
Super visually confusing.
And then you can rank your friends, you know? Who's in your top 8?
Right.
That matters.
Yeah. It does.
So
all my friends knew how they stood anyway. We didn't need a MySpace
page
for that.
Yeah.
So
you just tell them. I just call them up on the phone.
Right.
Hey, your
hate to tell you.
Is dropping.
But you went from 3 to 7.
Yeah. Just to let you know.
There's
a good Seinfeld episode where he's being ranked on his girlfriend's speed dial.
That's tough to, that was tough to adjust, the old school speed dial.
You really had to want it to get up there.
All right, here we go. The Dangerous Distortion of Fear by Edward Song.
Okay. I felt like we were supposed to make a joke there, but I didn't have one.
Vampire in the Pacific Northwest.
Edward, very nice.
All right. Franklin, this is his opening here. Franklin Delano Roosevelt delivered perhaps his most famous line, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself," at a first inauguration in 1933.
This is a very famous line. It's true.
Yeah.
I do know this one, yes. The speech stands as one of the most significant in American political history, but I confess that his best-known claim has always baffled me. This he was, 1933. This was middle of the Great Depression. Unemployment was at 25%, and the economy had contracted by almost a third. This was also, a rise of Adolf Hitler became Chancellor of Germany just 1 month before his speech. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of like leading up to this, the 30s of Germany, which will lead ultimately to World War II.
And the 40s of Germany.
Tough time.
It's a rough time. It's a rough time.
Establishing the timeline. Right.
Thank you. And also to the 50s.
Right.
You
know. And thereafter, the 60s.
I don't really know too much about the 60s in Germany, if I'm being honest. So there you go. So we would say maybe it was quite a bit to fear if you were an American at that time. But the psychology of fear, he's going to say, maybe Franklin was onto something. So what do we think here? Let's talk about fear first.
Okay.
What do you think about, is that the only thing we have to fear, or are there more things to fear?
I mean, I think FDR's overall thrust is really kind of very astute, right? That when we are afraid of something, it's rare that that thing can actually harm us. We're usually afraid of the notion of being afraid at some level, right? Like, if I'm afraid of the dark in my basement as a kid, right? The dark cannot actually hurt me.
Sure.
But I fear being afraid of the dark in some sense. And so I think there's something astute and clinical about that. I think the way in which we process fear is maybe not that simple, but I think if we are aware that there is a bigger thing, from the Christian perspective, right? There is a bigger thing that is greater than all of our fear, greater than anything that can cause us fear. And I think FDR is right on track.
Yeah. I think maybe on a slightly less theoretical plane, right? That there are some things that are valid to be scared of, but I think misplaced fear, like projecting that fear onto other things, like kind of scapegoating, is where we run afoul of a whole lot of trouble, right? I am afraid of, I guess, a political climate that further disenfranchises already disenfranchised or vulnerable people, right? And a lot of people approach that very differently, and we can look at our political climate and the state of our nation and say, well, the problem is immigrants, or the problem is Medicare, or whatever. And so that is where I see a lot of very practical fallout of that. Sure. Right. Yeah.
Well, and for FDR's time, right, that was certainly an issue that they were facing. Now, FDR is not sinless, right? Would lead to Japanese internment camps and all sorts of other horrible things that we look back on as our own version of American atrocities. But that notion of we don't have to be afraid of the immigrant or of Medicare, or that we have to be afraid of the fact that we're afraid of those things, right? We have to be afraid of that we as a people are afraid of something that can't actually hurt us. I think that's a helpful observation.
All good thoughts here. One thing we can say for certain, when we see something scary, the first part of our brain that lights up is our fear center. I mean, this is just the reality. That's our base root is our brain stem is lighting up. And
I think that's our fear. Amygdala, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Well done. Good science word.
I think that is a part of the brain.
Yeah. You are correct. And before rational parts realize what's happening, fear takes hold immediately.
Yeah.
So that would be, commonly called our fight or flight, these things, or freeze, or fib. That I like to think that.
Fib? You just start telling a lie?
Well, if somebody confronts you, maybe your original thought is to lie.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
To agree or to get out of trouble.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. So I was actually, this is a little bit related. I was watching a video of somebody giving a speech recently about how the pattern of Christianity breaks with tradition of a lot of other religious, call them fables, right? Or religious traditions. Mm-hmm. So there's a pattern in many major religions where it's, there's this pattern of wrongdoing and then blame and then scapegoating, right? Mm-hmm. And Christianity flips that on its head in a way where there is this wrongdoing and we are all participatory in the wrongdoing, and then somebody who's blameless takes that that punishment. And it's just a really interesting kind of twist on the the fear and scapegoating, right, that we see in Jesus and the cross.
Yeah.
So. Look, I'm always pro Jesus. Yeah,
we are. We're pro Jesus. Yeah,
yeah.
It's in the fine print.
Edward here will kind of highlight some different studies about fear that I think are interesting, and I don't want to get into all of them, but I think one that I found the most interesting, this experiment that he's going to highlight about fear, is participants answered questions about their willingness to help homeless people, and the first half looked at anxiety-inducing images, pictures of wild animals, spiders, people being attacked, things like that.
Ooh. I was not feeling anxiety until the people being attacked.
Like, yeah.
Ooh, Fat Bear Week and spiders.
Spiders aren't scary?
I'm not scared of spiders.
What are you scared of?
What about the giant spiders that live in Australia, the like huntsman spiders?
I mean, I'm not scared of a picture of that spider.
Well, yeah, true, but
I don't sit in a room and say, oh, it's a spider. Like, I don't get anxious. Afraid of that. Yeah. Sure. Now, if you like have an actual one of those spiders in my presence and like put it on my
hot
head.
Hot potato.
Yeah, yeah, then I'm going to have some fear and anxiety about that. Sure. But the picture does not freak me out.
Yeah.
But people who first saw those images were significantly less willing to help black homeless people over white ones.
Okay, so I see.
Oh.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I understand this. I see anxiety-producing images.
Correct.
And then I am put in a position to help either a black and or white homeless person, and I am less likely to help the black person than the white person if I have seen those images first.
Correct.
Versus if I just go up and see the homeless people.
Yeah, in comparison, white participants in a control group who are exposed to neutral images were about equally willing to help homeless people regardless of race.
Doesn't that just tell us we're super racist?
Well, I think it tells us that our anxiety and our fear response is to self-select to our in-group.
Okay.
Yeah, it's to other people. And that by race so is the easiest way to other than
both groups of people viewing the images were white.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I assume, I, you know. Like, yeah. So, yeah, I think that's an easy thing to think of, like, based on our, you know, our racism, our prejudice, our media consumption, that we would, by seeing things that are threatening, and then it's easy to see members of a different race threatening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it goes back to tribal instincts, right? I mean, when you are a part of a tribe and every other tribe is a threat, right, you have to be able to identify your tribe. And if you're under anxiety, you have to be able to identify who do I help and who do I not.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's a primal sense to that that can be, I think we could trace back. And I mean, that's my theory anyway. I don't have any science to back that up. But I think the real challenge for us is to be, and maybe this is where we get back to fear and FDR, right? To be aware enough of our own anxiety and our own fear to overcome it, to say, I'm not going to let that fear determine who I help and who I don't help, because I'm not living in a cave in a tribe anymore, right? Like, I'm living in a society where both of these people are not actually a threat to me. And and I can, so how do we do the work to overcome our fear rather than letting our fear overcome us?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I think this is like, pointing to like, okay, like I usually am not looking at pictures of spiders, you know, like that's just not really what I'm about. But
you're not.
But am I consuming media or consuming things that is designed to make me afraid of something
or
someone? Yeah. And then if I sit in that long enough and I go out into my community, that's going to come with me.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the reality. Yeah. If like that is, will kind of be attached to that. And so if like you're watching the news and like you're feeling fear while you're watching it, maybe that would be a good sign to be like, this is not going to be, I'm not going to take this out and have healthy, rational responses to the people in my own community.
Yeah.
Especially if it is not just like factual based news, but if it's opinion based or things like that. where it's easy to scapegoat, to fear, like, well, yeah. Now I'm more afraid of the undocumented or people who are different.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, and even when it's not about people, right? I mean, we see this with hurricane coverage here in the Gulf Coast, right? That a lot of hurricane coverage from national media and things like that is fear-based. Like, how mm-hmm. big of a disaster can we make this out like it's going to be? Sure. And so, I mean, I've made an intentional choice following the lead of people who have been around here a lot longer than me to not necessarily listen to that for my hurricane coverage, right? Sure. But to, like, find local people who are, you know, doing the work on the ground and that sort of thing. And, like, being able to self-select that so that you can make more rational decisions rather than letting the hype fill your or feed your your tank.
Yeah, we several years ago, we were set up to go take our youth on a mission trip to New Orleans.
Yeah.
And right before Hurricane Beryl, was it Beryl?
No, Beryl was just last year. It was another one. I don't know. It was Hurricane something.
I think it was Barry. Maybe it was Barry. I don't know. Whatever. Made landfall in part of Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And there was an image placed on the news of this woman walking through, like, downtown, you know, New Orleans with waist-deep water, like holding a child. And like, it was like a scary image.
Mm-hmm.
And we were supposed to leave like the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember calling our organization that we're going to be with. And they're like, it's fine. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Like, it is business as usual here.
Yep. Yeah.
Like there, we're not scared. We're not, you know, you could drive here and it'll be fine. You can get here and it'll be fine. Like, there's nothing here. But like that image is still in our mind of like, so like.
And in the minds of the parents of our youth who we were taking that.
So we ended up postponing by a day.
We did.
But even then, like, it was not a big deal. Like, the trip was not impacted by weather at all.
Yeah.
Like, and so.
But according to the media coverage, you know, all of Louisiana was underwater.
We had massive amounts of flooding, and like, we have some history with New Orleans and flooding.
We do.
And so, you know, obviously, like, there's a lot of fear, you know, attached to these types of things. So, yeah, obviously, fear is present. We can see, you know, Edward's going to quote, like, you know, in scripture, right after Adam and Eve sin, the first thing they are is afraid.
Yep.
You know, like, they're afraid of God.
Yep.
You know, like, that this fear sets in immediately.
And the first thing they try to do is blame.
Yeah.
They're afraid and they immediately try to blame.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think, you know, fear ultimately deepens that kind of curvature in on oneself, that this fear of others. So it's easy to say, like, who is the problem? Somebody else.
Yeah. Not me.
Outsiders. We retreat into our own tribes. Mm-hmm. We retreat into our own circles and say, like, those people are the problem.
Yeah.
And I think part of the challenge is to start seeing this, like, within ourselves. Like, you know, like, it's easier for me to see that in other people. Like, when I have to be like, am I doing this? You know, do
it's me. Hi.
Yeah.
I'm the problem.
Yeah.
All right, Swift.
I know.
Yeah. So if fear is such a central problem of human existence, it's coming no surprise that the Bible talks about it a lot.
Mm.
Probably the biggest or most common commandment is do not be afraid.
Okay.
That this is
it would certainly be in the running. Yeah.
Yeah. That this is our most frequent. This is coming up quite often.
It does.
That this is professed by angels or by prophets or by God, like, do not be afraid.
Yeah.
So what do we take with that? Like, if the Bible is telling you don't be afraid, what do you do with that? How would you preach on that?
How would I preach on do not be afraid? Well,
I find that super scary.
I would throw that right out the window and hide under a blanket.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the reminder here in all the places where we hear messages of do not be afraid, the call back is always that God is in control.
Yeah.
Right. And this, to me, I don't know that this is what FDR means, but this is how I take FDR's words too, right? The only thing we have to fear is fear itself, because God is bigger than anything that we're afraid of. And our faith in Jesus promises that even if this thing that's in front of us actually kills us, God is still bigger than death, right? And that we cannot be defeated by this thing that's in front of us. And the reality of that is terrifying, but it's not what wins, right? The thing that we are afraid of is never what wins. The promise of scripture, the promise of faith in Jesus is that God, Jesus, love are always the thing that wins. And so, I had this conversation with a former member here at Lord of Life once upon a time, right? They were talking about gun control, and I was talking about how I'm just not a person who ever wants to have a gun in my house. Like, it's just not me. And they were like, well, what if you need to defend your family? I was like, I cannot imagine a scenario in which me having a gun makes that better, right? That's partially because I don't know how to use a gun or what
not
to do.
Not a crack shot. Yeah. Right.
I can't imagine in which me having a gun makes that situation better. And does it terrify me to think that my child might die because I don't have a gun? Yeah, I'm afraid that my child might die, but I'm also confident in God's grace to care for my child if that happens, and to care for me if I'm left in the wake of that tragedy, right? Like, when I am not facing that tragedy is when I have to be thinking about how I'm going to handle it, because I'm not in that anxiety right now, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not looking at spiders. I'm not facing the danger at this moment. So I have to make a clear, level-headed decision. My clear, level-headed decision says faith is greater than whatever fear I'm going to face. I can't make a decision on faith if I'm basing it on the fear itself. Did I come around to a coherent thought there? Because I felt like I
think so. Okay. Yeah. Also, wasp spray works just fine. Just throwing that out there.
Is this for spiders or is this for a gun
for
situation?
For home defense. Okay. Yeah. more accurate with wasp spray if you're not a big gun shooter. So
yeah,
I do have a can of bear spray in my
bear spray.
Is this left over from Alaska?
It's left over from Big Bend.
Do you keep it for just this for home defense?
I mean, like, we had it, and so like when I was, you know, where you can sit at my, it can, you know, sit on my bedside table, you know,
on the bedside table.
Well, it's actually in our pantry, but
don't be fumbling for the water bottle in the middle of the night. Yes.
It's right next to their cooking spray in the panting.
It's also sealed up. Yeah. So, but yeah.
So you want to deal with cellophane and like a home invasion?
It's got a zip tie.
Crinkle, crinkle, crinkle.
I think we could have some fun at a youth group with this. Just you know.
That's true. Test it out.
Yeah.
Bear spray the youths.
I think
who can tough it out.
From my recollection here, and that when this commandment, "Do not be afraid," mm-hmm. is given to people, it's honestly there are things to be afraid of. Like there are things like these rarely are coming to like. Everything was good and an angel showed up and said, "Do not be afraid." Like usually it is like on the brink of war or this mystical being appears in front of you that probably looks different or a commandment of God asking something that is going to be difficult, hard, or nay, impossible for you or your community. And this "do not be afraid" is attached to it. So like it's an acknowledgement like there are things to be afraid of. Like there are things that are scary, but there's something bigger. So he's going to reference here that at the end of the first century, you know, there's this book, First John is written to a church in somewhat of a crisis, that things are happening, people are leaving, that the author is going to talk about like, from their perspective, they're approaching the end times, like the Antichrist is on the rise. Mm-hmm. These are things mentioned in the book, kind of like how last week, at time of release, there was supposed to be a rapture.
Sure.
Hey, we're still within the window as of recording. We've got.
Are we?
Yeah, you know, okay. It was yesterday or today. We've still got some time. So we're not out of it yet.
Which, again, mostly the vast majority of Christians did not believe, but a handful online did. But there could have been a rapture last week.
Have we said on the podcast before that the rapture is complete ridiculous? Okay,
bunk. Good. It's bunk. Yeah,
that is it is not a real biblical thing.
Made up in 1830, right?
Yeah, made up.
That's about right. Yeah.
And it's an almost entirely American evangelical thing.
Rooted in fear. Look at that.
Christian fan fiction.
Yeah, almost entirely. And so the only Christian communities are those that have been influenced by American evangelism. So
sure.
So mainline Christianity, Orthodox, Catholic Christianity, none of them have a rapture.
Yeah. No rapture. Into it.
Yeah. But anyway, the book of First John is almost entirely about love. Mm-hmm. Like this is, it's really just about like, here's why you need to love people.
Some
this
great
is why you
need love to feel passages love. Come from John.
Including, it's phrase here, there's no love in fear, but perfect love casts out fear.
Yeah.
And so I think if we're like,
that's the stuff, John.
Got it. I think say like, I'm worried about fear. Mm-hmm. This is a good prescription.
Mm-hmm.
Love more. Like this is
more cowbell.
Yeah. Sure. You can always add it in, you know. But I think this is an important part of like, how do we deal with fear running rampant in our society and our community? Yeah. Our brain is finding ways to love more. And C.S. Lewis has like a really neat passage about love, and he's talking about like, you know, if I'm wondering like, do I love my wife enough? I just act as if I do, and then I feel more love. So like, if I'm at the store, I buy her the thing that I know she would like, even if I'm frustrated or upset with her. I buy her this tea that I know she would like, even if I'm upset. And I find myself in that moment loving her more, even though it didn't necessarily come beforehand. So if we're like, how do I get perfect love? Well, maybe you have to figure out, like, how do I love the people I disagree with or I fear more?
Yeah.
So maybe it's like I have to force myself to look at a spider and then go give something to a person who's homeless that would scare me.
I love this for you. Maybe this is your new
carrying around
routine.
Spiders.
For me, it's sharks. Sharks would be the most scary.
Oh, sharks.
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I don't know that I knew that about you.
I don't like that,
Patrick doesn't
bodies
want to go
in the water. Of water that you cannot see the bottom. So
okay, yeah. So big lakes, oceans.
Yeah, I don't like it. Yeah, dirty lakes.
Anything in Galveston.
Dirty lakes, yeah,
no, I don't
all
like
of
it.
Galveston.
Yeah. Water that you cannot see, I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You'd like Tahoe. You can see very far in that. It's
That's
very
fine.
Clean.
Yeah.
Okay, how where do you stand on that? Was it Lake Superior or Lake Huron, where there's the shipwreck with all the bodies floating, but it's like perfectly clear so you can see it?
Ooh, yeah.
Anti.
Okay.
I don't think you can see the bodies.
Can't you though?
I think
because
the bodies are
clear.
But the bodies are in the ship. The ship is not clear.
No, they're not. There's a couple of them. They're outside of the ship, and they're just they're floating because they've got like neutral buoyancy down there, right? And so, but they're calcified as well. So they're just. Ooh.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, you should look it up. Maybe you shouldn't.
What if there were sharks swimming through that?
Yes,
no.
There's no sharks in the Great Lakes.
Sharks are scary.
Allegedly.
She says confidently without knowing.
Sharks are saltwater. Right. There's no sharks in this Great Lakes.
Yeah. But now you know of. There could be some, you know, hiding in its depths.
This is like Loch Ness.
There you go. So what are our final conclusions here on fear then, if we want to start thinking of a wrapping up point?
Yeah, final conclusion. If we don't want to
fear bad, trust good.
So no, I mean, I think your point, right? There are things in this world that it makes sense to be afraid of, but there is always something that's bigger than that. And I think that rooting ourselves in love in order to overcome that is a really powerful step from the perspective of faith, right? That how do I love my enemy more so that I'm not like, if you think I'm supposed to be afraid of an immigrant because they're coming in, whatever, how do I love the immigrant more? Because that's the call, right? Is to get rid of fear by loving more. How do we do that? And how do we love the stranger more? How do we love the thing that we're afraid of more? How do we love sharks more? Whatever that might be.
Yeah. Maybe it's a little simpler to start with, like, what can we meet with curiosity, right? Like, instead of just this nervous system reaction to something. Like if I decide to be curious about my neighbor who's an immigrant instead of fearful.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, one bad example, but
Mr. Whitman, be curious, not judgmental.
Is your neighbor Mr. Whitman?
No, Walt Whitman. That was his quote.
Wow, this is some personal information.
You know my neighbor, old Mr. Whitman.
I was quoting a literary thing. I figured you knew that. I don't know.
I know Walt Whitman, but when you say it, Mr. Whitman.
Well, but you were quoting a famous thing that Whitman had said. I thought this was a fairly self-explanatory situation.
You should throw out just old Walt.
Disney?
Yeah. This is so confusing.
I don't think Breaking Bad. So Edward kind of closes this his right up here. So perhaps Roosevelt was more correct than he knew. The real thing to fear in the end is not some specific or imagined, that's my danger or threat, but the way we let fear pull us from the love of God and our neighbor. And I think that's the reality. When we are saturated in fear, it does pull us from trusting in who God is and what he says about our lives, and pulls us further from loving our neighbor as oneself. And that's the true detriment to fear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not to, again, there are things to be afraid of, but when we let that run rampant, it does pull us away. So.
Yeah. From my read of history, I will say that FDR was very confident that he was right when he said that. Whether or not he like knew, like,
he's not always right, but he's always confident.
He's always confident that he was right.
Yep.
I think in order to become president,
you have to have an element of that. Sure.
In your own worldview and solutions to the problems of the country. Like it's hard to become president and be like, I don't really know. You know, like even though that's probably the most accurate way, like the best president would be that, but it's hard to become president if that's your point of view.
You at least can't present that. Yeah. But that's not what we're here about. We're not here for beyond the presidency. We're here for Beyond Sundays.
Sure.
Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, you can find all of our stuff at beyondsundaypodcast.com and send us your fat bear names at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.